to Goldie and MVR live at 5. Today you are sitting in here with me, which would be the MVR. My colleague Goldie is out on assignment doing a lot of great journalistic opportunities to bring so much more to the table next week. I have a co-host today whose name is Mark from South County.
Hello,
but more
folks.
Importantly, yeah, say hello.
Hello, hello.
So this is the thing I've been most excited about all day today. I have teased it. I have talked about it. I have a gentleman on the phone, Dan Perkins, who to be honest with you, I was listening in the car on the way into the show a couple days ago, and I heard this gentleman talking, and I did not want to get out of the car. And I'm sure most of our listeners would wish I would not get out of the car, but actually, it was amazing to me how entrenched this guy is and how knowledgeable he is. And he's written books, and he's got so many great things out there. So, Dan, how are you today?
I don't know whether I can live up to that expectation, but I'm fine. Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
No, I appreciate it, my friend. I'm the author of 3 books, The Brotherhood of the Red Nile, and I mean, you've got so much going on out there. As I heard you on the, I'm not going to call it a competitor because we don't have any competitors, but I hear you, and the knowledge you actually have about all of the terrorism and the from Iran and the bombs that were supposed to come over here to the USA. I tell you, man, when you were talking, I would be as it says in Psalms, as God would say, be still and listening, I have you. So I was still and I was listening. So with that being said, I go 17, 20 topics I want to get your opinions on. And we only have an hour.
Okay.
And I probably will not break at the end of the half because I want to hear all about you and what you're doing with everything. So let's start with what your opinion is on what happened with Benghazi, because I've been talking about that in the air for the last couple of days, on why Secretary Clinton actually did, she gave these weapons to the rebel groups in Libya who masqueraded as terrorists. So take it from there.
Well, what you had is Libya was a series of decisions made by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who decided, along with the president, that there had to be regime change in the Middle East. The president drew a line in the sand with Syria, and then we wanted to get rid of the leadership in Iran. We wanted to get rid of the leadership in Afghanistan. We wanted to get rid of the leadership in Libya, and we wanted to get rid of the leadership in Egypt. Because we felt that it was important, we meaning Mr. Obama and Mrs. Clinton.
So why would we as Americans ever want to get rid of our relationships with Israel or Egypt? Why would we ever want to do that?
Because we're dealing with people who have a different view of the United States and its role on a global basis than what we might have as ordinary citizens. The problem is that these politicians do not understand something that, as a father of 4 and 4 grandchildren, when they were growing up, one of the lessons I tried to teach them that everything we do in life has consequences. Sometimes they're good and sometimes they're bad. Sometimes they happen immediately, and sometimes they're delayed.
Right.
And we had a situation in Libya where Mrs. Clinton decided, even though that after Gaddafi had given up his nuclear weapons, she decided that he had to go, he had to leave. And so she pushed the president to arm the rebels, to overthrow the government, and get rid of Gaddafi. The problem that both of them made, meaning both of them, Clinton and Obama, is that they didn't know who was going to replace.
Yeah, because they're masquerading as terrorists, right?
Yes. And so what happened was chaos ruled in Libya, and that ultimately led to the attack in Benghazi and the murder of the 4 American citizens. But it's important to understand that the death of those four men may have happened on a particular day, but the decision to change the regime in Libya happened much, much earlier than that. And so what we have is as the result of the review of the Benghazi Commission, what we saw, many of us didn't like what we saw, in that we were 53 days out from a re-election
election,
of the
right.
president.
Right.
And that over half the time, while the Americans were under attack in Benghazi, we had a situation where the president and the secretary of state and other people in the room, the politicians, were trying to figure out how they manage this so that it doesn't affect the election. And number
now,
two.
Now, Dan, I'm going to interrupt you. I'm going to interrupt you real quick. Because is this the same room that when everybody was watching Osama bin Laden being killed? Are we talking about that same situation room that everybody's
yes.
in that room deciding what to do at that time?
Mm-hmm. That's
right.
Correct.
So there was plenty of people, plenty of heads of state, plenty of heads of everywhere else, just right there,
mm-hmm.
making the same decision without making
yes.
a decision.
Well, the decision was being driven by the reelection of the president, but the second part of the discussion that came out in the testimony in the hearing and the report from the Republicans, the majority side. Was that they spent a great deal of time trying to figure out how they were going to manage the situation for Mrs. Clinton so that if she was going to run for president, it would look favorably on her.
So it's all PR-based. So, it's all partisan-based. It's all about what – we don't care what our troops are – we don't care about what's happening at our embassy right now. We don't care about that. We need to play a game of chess and figure out what's going to happen in the future.
PR work.
Right, yeah. Now, the other thing that was extremely revealing, and I don't understand why this happened. Nobody seems to be able to answer the question. There appears to be an order from the President of the United States and the Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta, that said to the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, do whatever we have to try and help these people. And the military did nothing. Nothing.
Isn't it true? I mean, from what I've read, when these Army Rangers were ready to engage, they had to potentially change uniforms four times because we didn't want boots on the ground because of Obama's policy. So we didn't know how to go in and assist our people that were being attacked.
Let me help you phrase it a different way.
Sure.
The administration was concerned that the clothing that our operatives would wear would be offensive to the Libyan people, and so that they were trying to figure out what was the appropriate, I use the word costume, to wear so that they could fit in it and they wouldn't be offensive to the Libyan people.
Now, that's crap.
That's garbage.
Well, but it's representational of the concept that we have had leadership, or lack thereof, in the White House and in the State Department that is more concerned about political correctness than trying to solve a serious problem.
I mean, that's a great segue because you were one of the first individuals ever to come out and talk about Donald Trump and mm-hmm. what he represents and. You know, if I'm not mistaken, you were literally one of the original folks to come out and speak about him and what he potentially could do for America. Would you expand?
Right.
Would you expand on that?
Literally the day he was he announced his candidacy, I wrote an op-ed piece and I said that what he's saying is going to resonate dramatically with the American people because we've had 7.5 years. You're not probably old enough to have experienced Jimmy Carter as president.
I love you because you're a bigger fan than me.
I was young. I was really young when he was the president. So
no, yeah. I was there.
But
go ahead.
But we had a situation in this country where we had Jimmy Carter as president. We had a president who told the American people its best days were behind us. We had a president who said he was going to light the Christmas tree. They should, and we should not lie to us to preserve energy because we are under an Arab oil embargo. This is a president that had 47 hostages in the country of Iran. And we had rapid inflation and very high interest rates. And one man came in, Ronald Reagan, and he changed the whole psyche of the country.
People are clapping. I'm sorry. No, people clapping.
And so I say to people that it's important to understand that one person can change this 330 million people economy and country. And to prove my point, Barack Obama came in, and he promised hope and change. And for the last 7 years, you know, the American people have been looking for the hope, and the change is going out of their pocket because they're making less money. So it's when I saw Donald Trump and I saw how he was speaking, what he was saying, and the style of which he was speaking, which was from the heart, without a speech or a teleprompter, I knew that he was going to resonate with a lot of people in this country and that he was a very, very serious candidate for the nomination.
So how do you feel? How do you feel right now that he has changed advisors? You got Manafort, Lewandowski's gone. Now you got Manafort, and now you see him using teleprompters. And he's always said he'd become more presidential. As we both know, when you go through the primaries, it's a completely different campaign. Now you're going for the general election, and you want to win the presidency. Do you think?
Right.
Do you think that Trump can actually resonate with the general population versus, as he would say, crooked Hillary right now? Or how do you feel that's going to happen? What's your gut instinct on that?
I believe that the first presidential debate in late September will be the largest viewed television program in the history of television.
Besides the finality of Seinfeld?
MASH.
Or whatever. It will be the largest, most watched television event probably in the world.
I agree
now,
with that.
Now, what I believe is that there's a huge risk here in that particular program. It is possible that depending upon how the parties interact with each other, that the outcome of the election will be decided on that point, on that debate.
Right. So the RNC, if you look at the RNC right now, you have so many folks. You look at Trey Gowdy from South Carolina saying he's got to go to the beach for that weekend. He's not going to speak. And you see Mike Tyson wanted to speak at the RNC. Yeah. I mean, it's almost like a backlash when you see that Donald Trump, when he signed, along with the other 17 delegates who are pledging for the allegiance of the RNC to be the candidate, they all signed it, and he signed it. And now he comes back and he states, like, it's BS. These guys should all be signing and supporting me, but they're not. Mm-hmm. They're not.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, he also makes a comment about they should never be able to run for public office again, which is a DT, Donald Trump's, you know, off-the-cuff statement, which you got to reel that back a little bit. But what do you think is going to happen at the RNC? What's going to happen there?
Well, I think that there is a great, a wonderful parallel that those of us who pay attention should be aware of, and that is what happened in Britain when the common folks, the middle class, ultimately said to the elites and to the elected politicians, we've had enough of your crap. Right. And so what's going on here, this challenge to Trump by the leadership or what is perceived to be the leadership of the Republican Party is a replay of what happened in England. And that is that the longstanding elite leadership of the Republican Party is under attack, not only by Trump, but he's under attack by the Trump supporters, and they see themselves between a rock and a hard place, because if they continue to stay away and continue to criticize Trump and he wins, they're gone. Their careers are over. They're basically out of politics. So they're trying to, I think they're right now, they're still trying to figure out which way is the wind blowing and which way should they be going.
That's hurting their local campaigns and their local markets, their local states.
I've heard that. I have to tell you, with all disrespect, I disagree with that.
Good.
I think that there are an awful lot of people who are running for public office at the city, county, and state level who have adopted maybe not the exact words of Mr. Trump, but clearly the issues that he's brought to us: lack of income, lack of economic growth, tremendous debt, government out of control. Those are things that local Republicans who are running for a local office can get their hands on, and they can do so with or without using Trump. We are literally at a crossroads of both parties. We have this presumptive nominee on the Democratic side who was supposed to be coronated by the Democratic Party, and Bernie Sanders came in and threw a monkey wrench.
How about that, Jill? And
drove her further to the left, more towards the socialist communist side.
And he is still yet to support her. As of today, he is not yet supporting her.
That's true.
Do you think that he is hoping that this whole Lynch, Clinton, airplane, tarmac, and Sky Harbor, Phoenix, and maybe the DOJ will bring something down against her? Do you think he knows something that nobody else knows, so therefore he will be nominated?
No, but I don't believe he knows anything more than anybody else. but what I do believe is that he's a smart enough politician to read the tea leaves to not walk away, because if he walks away, he leaves an opening for who I call Uncle Joe. And by the way, I will take the credit as the first commentator many, many, many months ago when they were talking about Elizabeth Warren. I called her Pocahontas. Long before Mr. Trump.
One out of 32nd, right? One out of 32?
Well, no, it's because she had cheekbones. She didn't have
high cheekbones. That's
how she proves that she's got Indian blood. Anyway, so the point is that from Bernie's standpoint, he would be crazy to walk away, knowing up until this past Monday that there is an active criminal investigation. And as a result, why should he walk away from the nomination process if there's a possibility that Mrs. Clinton will be taken out by the FBI and the Justice Department? Now, his let me give you the flaw in his thinking, which I believe to be a flaw in his thinking.
In Bernie's thinking.
Yes.
Okay.
If Mrs. Clinton is not going to be the nominee, I believe, without question, the leadership of the Democratic Party will not permit Bernie Sanders to be the candidate, the nominee. I believe they will bring in Joe Biden or somebody else, John Kerry, who said he's willing to run, to replace her, but they will not get behind Bernie Sanders, because they understand that the great electorate in November will not elect a socialist communist president of the United States. So what will happen is that he's waiting. Now, I think things have changed dramatically with what happened earlier this week with the Attorney General and Mr. Clinton. I tend to be a little skeptical about certain things, you know, and we talked a little bit about this yesterday. What I've been saying on the air is let's take a look at what happened in Sky Harbor.
That is the craziest thing you could ever imagine. How do you have Lynch and Clinton ironically meeting on a tarmac?
At the same
and he comes in her plane and talks about grandchildren. Golf, right?
So, yes, but the issue here is should the meeting have ever taken place? The answer is, based on the code of ethics of the Justice Department, absolutely not. Now, I said a long time ago, after Eric Holder was replaced, and they brought in the new attorney general, I said that there could be a situation where the FBI, when I say a long time ago, I'm talking 6, 7 months, 8 months ago, I said if the FBI is going to issue to the Attorney General a case for the indictment, impounding of a grand jury and indictment of Hillary Clinton, that the Attorney General would recuse herself and as such would create a situation where she would not, the Attorney General would in essence be neutralized.
Not enough evidence.
And
right?
No. What I'm saying is that I'm talking about a strategy here, the strategy of the Clinton campaign. Okay, they've got a new Attorney General. It got Comey doing an investigation, and that the heat's constantly being turned up. And so what is Clinton going to do? If they can compromise the Attorney General, they can postpone, because remember that the Attorney General is an appointed position subject to the confirmation process of the Senate Judiciary Committee under the advice and consent rule of the Constitution. So I believe that this, and again, nobody else in the country has heard this until just now from me, and I don't think anybody else has said it.
Well, there may be only about 17 people listening, so but it is a podcast. That's okay. So let's go. Let's hear it. Let's go. Break the news. Breaking news. Fox News alert. Let's go.
So I think what's going on here is that the Clinton camp, including the former president, knows that Hillary's in serious trouble with the FBI. And what they had to do is they had to manipulate the situation. Now, Mrs. Lynch knew what the restrictions were under the code of ethics for the Treasury or for the Justice Department, so that she knew by agreeing to a meeting with the former president of the United States, who is the husband of a woman under investigation by the Justice Department, her department, would be inappropriate and inadmissible and would be a conflict of interest, but she decided to do it anyway. I don't think she wanted to do it. I think she was told she had to do it to create the compromise situation, which will ultimately lead to her having to recuse or resign
right,
as Attorney General, which means that an acting Attorney General would have to be appointed. Actings don't have to be approved by Congress. But the acting Attorney General will probably refuse to rule on whatever Comey gives that person, because they're going to believe that there isn't enough time left in the president's administration to get a grand jury going and to begin to take testimony to come to a conclusion.
So my question is, how in the world can anybody think, hypothetically, you have Bill Clinton, the ex-president, and you have Loretta Lynch, ironically enough, on a tarmac, on individual planes, on a tarmac, not in nowhere else. And a tarmac means they have their own individual planes.
Right.
Hey, how you doing? Why are you here? How are you here? Well, I'm just playing golf. What are you doing? How does that even make sense to anybody?
Well, the story that I heard yesterday is that there were three planes involved.
Oh.
They each came in on their own plane, and they met on a third plane. Now again, manipulation of the environment. The story was that no major news outlet was covering either was covering the trip of the Attorney General, or was following what the president was doing.
How often does that happen in your previous experience? How often does that really happen?
Almost never.
Okay, that's what I was looking for.
But understand. Supposedly, for a reason not known at the moment, there was a full news crew at Sky Harbor Airport that was able to film the people coming out of their planes and going into the third plane.
That's ridiculous. I mean, it's such a conspiracy.
Why?
Why? It's so BS. I mean, to me, it's just crazy.
But understand, yeah. Why were they there, and why did it need to be filmed? It needed to be filmed.
Documentation.
Because they needed to prove that the president, ex-president of the United States, and the current attorney general, and the ex-president's wife, who was under investigation by the Department of Treasury, and they both knew that it was against Justice Department policy to meet, they met anyway.
Yeah. Hey.
And so now we have Democrats who are suggesting that she acted in an inappropriate way and that she should recuse herself. The Democrats are suggesting that she should recuse herself from any involvement in the Clinton email program or the Clinton Foundation.
Well, let me reset this. We're listening to WGNU 920 CBS Sports 105.7 HD2. We're talking to Dan Perkins. And Dan, how can people reach you? How can they get a hold of you? How can they follow you?
Well, my books are titled The Brotherhood of the Red Nile, the trilogy on radical Islamic nuclear terrorism against the United States. Those are available from Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, or you can order them through your local bookstore. My website, which deals not only with my books, but also all of the commentary that I write, because I write for TheHill.com, I write for Reagan Baby, I write for The Daily Surge, and I write for Clash Daily. Those can be seen on my website, danperkins.guru. So you can see that and read the commentary. You can see probably 400 or hear 400 radio appearances just like we're doing here today, and several television interviews. And you can also get reviews on the book and read stuff about the book. So,
but more importantly, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Dan, but you know, the 4th of July weekend and all the amazing things that your foundation does, because I know you, you're the co-founder of Songs and Stories for Soldiers. Let's talk about that for a few minutes.
Sure. Songs and Stories for Soldiers was formed under the inspiration and request from the Lord. I was in Southwest Florida, and we're going to be living full time, but we have a winter home there. And in November of 2013, I was asked to go to Miami Beach to meet a couple that had a foundation for wounded warriors, and asked me if I could help them raise some money by doing a book tour in Southwest Florida, Southeast Florida. And I said that I'd love to. So I was going to go over to there. And so I left on a Tuesday morning about 9:30. If you know anything about Southern Florida, from Fort Myers to Miami Beach.
I actually do. I know from Fort Lauderdale to Hollywood to West Palm. I know all the way down there. It's
Alligator Alley. Yeah. And so I was on Alligator Alley, and about 45 minutes later, I found myself on the side of the road, and I was in a cold sweat. My vision was blurred. My cell phone didn't work, and I had no idea what the hell was going on. And I was afraid I was having a heart attack or something, and no way to get help. And about 15 minutes later, everything cleared up, except that the Lord had given me this mission to do something about our soldiers, and he actually named the foundation called Songs and Stories. We started the foundation. We got our 501c3 in December of 2014, so a little over 18 months ago. And what we're doing is trying to deal with one of the most devastating parts of returning veterans, and that is post-traumatic stress disorder. PTSD affects probably at least a third of the people in the military today. And it's a very debilitating problem. It causes sleep deprivation, which in turn causes bad decisions, which in turn causes an escalating suicide rate. By the end of 2014, the veteran suicide rate was about one every 85 minutes. By June of 2015, it had dropped about one in every 78 minutes. By the end of 2015, it was down to one in 63 minutes.
That's awesome.
Now it's like one an hour.
Wow.
And the primary cause of the suicide rate is post-traumatic stress disorder. So we were introduced in February of 2015 to an organization in outside of Dallas, Texas, in Arlington, Texas. At the time, it was called the Carrick Brain Center. It was one of the leading research institutions for both the treatment of traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress disorder. We met the founder, Dr. Kagan Randall, and we talked to him about our program. He absolutely fell in love with it, and he treats PTSD for free for veterans. They have a foundation that treats it, and he uses our program during treatment cycles, and especially at nighttime, because on our MP3 player that we give to the soldiers is an eight-hour sleep audio designed to help the soldier get to REM sleep. REM sleep is where the body and the soul heals. If you can't get to REM sleep, the healing process takes a long, long time. And unfortunately, veterans within the VA system, the way the VA system treats post-traumatic stress disorder and sleep deprivation is through narcotics.
You know, the interesting thing, Dan, I'm going to interrupt you because I just looked at the comments yesterday, how we are now accepting transgender individuals into military, but yet mm-hmm. we still cannot accept how much we are screwing over all of our veterans who need help. That, mm-hmm. to me, fascinates me. When I don't care who the next president is, I think they're both crazy, in my own words, but I think when it comes to our veterans, the people, especially on the 4th of July weekend, you look at mm-hmm. what these individuals have fought for and fight continuously for. The VA is so screwed up underneath this administration, man. It is so screwed up. How can these guys and gals who come back who gave their life or gave their opportunity for me to do what I do, for you to do what you do, not get the help that they need? How in the hell does that happen?
Because of the bureaucracy that's involved, it's the VA system has not just been troubled under Barack Obama.
That's been for a while. I know.
A long time. And you know, just to give you some idea of how screwed up things are, we have on our website Songs and Stories for Soldiers.
Say it slower so everybody knows how to get there.
Okay, the website is songsandstoriesforsoldiers.us. And on the website is where the soldier goes to get content. We have 3 million songs, over 100,000 audiobooks, 30,000 old-time radio shows, and 4 additional sleep audios that they can all download for free. And they can use our device or any MP3 device. We get about 35,000 hits a month. We've already distributed over 7,000. We'll probably be over 8,000 by the end of July in the program. But what happened is that we have a program that we know that works. We know that there's research, clinical research, that shows music is wonderful therapy for treating post-traumatic stress disorder. Okay? Even the Veterans Administration did a study that concluded that music can be extremely helpful in treating post-traumatic stress disorder.
That's after you get back from the military, after you get back from your tour, when you get back to the States and you're kind of, let's call it, air quote, lost. And you don't know where to go from here. You're confused. You're discombobulated.
Yes.
You don't know what to do. So you're
right.
You don't know.
Right. And so they have the Veterans Administration did this study that supported what it was we're doing. I called the Veterans Administration to try and just let them know what we were doing with our Songs and Stories for Soldiers project. I called four times, got voice messages. I finally called on the fifth time, and I started to tell them about what we're doing with our foundation and how we're trying to help soldiers. And they said, quote, we can't talk to you.
Oh, that's crazy.
So I decided that to try and spend my time working with the Veterans Administration directly. The bureaucracy in Washington is not very productive. So in the 18 months or so that we've had our foundation, we're now in 37 hospitals, outpatient centers, veteran centers, warriors in transition units.
That's awesome.
And homeless shelters across the United States.
That's awesome, dude. Dan, you know, when I heard you the other day on the radio, I just felt a bond to you because I felt your passion. I felt your need for, you know, to help all these veterans that come home. And I've got many, many family members that are veterans of the military. And when I heard you talking, I just literally could not turn off the radio. Then I hear you talking about, now we have all these recent terrorist attacks, like Orlando.
Right.
We have all these, you know, what the heck do you think is going on there?
Well, Orlando, again, if you if people pay attention and listen.
Well, nobody's listening right now. This is me talking.
People listen. ISIL told us in May that they were going to have a series of attacks against the West, including the United States, in June. And they've delivered their attacks. It's now July 1st. One of those attacks was in the United States in Orlando. Again, dramatically covered up by the United States government, not letting the American people know truly what happened, they've tried to manage the situation and withheld information from the American people. We have, on the other hand, we have 2 weeks later or so, we have the attack at the airport in Istanbul.
Right.
And I point to you an example of agendas.
So I'm going to interrupt you right now because one thing you had mentioned when I heard you in the talking, whatever station it was, is the word agenda. Because you had said there are sleeper attacks, there's individuals out there that want to do attacks on, you know, America, Western Hemisphere, wherever. But you had a very unique take on how that actually happens from I have now idealized, I want to attack XYZ, but they have to get it proofed through their upper echelon of individuals. How does this terrorism stuff work?
Well, you have a group of people who are Muslims, who are following the Quran and Sharia law, who believe that anybody who is not a Muslim is an infidel. And if you're classified as an infidel, you're given two choices. You either convert to the Islamic faith or you die. Mm. There's no middle ground. And so because of the nature, the violent nature of their religion and how their religion is enforced, you have the ability to, because of the nature of the Islamic religion and the Islamic faith, which is now 1.3 billion people.
If I'm not mistaken, did you say it almost happened 620 AD? Am I making that up, or did I hear you say that?
No, the 623 to 626 was when Islam was founded as a religion by Muhammad.
Right.
And he believed he was spoken to by Allah.
Because Moses, I'll let you go there because I heard it, but you'll say it so much better than me.
The point is that he needed to, he was developing this religion, the Islam religion, based on what he told his followers were inspirations from Allah, their version of God, and it was more detailed than the Ten Commandments. And so this Quran, which Allah gave to his people in about 623, 626, he also gave them an instruction when he gave them the Quran. He said, change not a period. So in the 1,400 years that have passed since the Quran was given to the Islamic people by Muhammad, nothing has been changed in their scripture.
Unlike the Bible, well, we have King James, we have the Message, we have the Voice, we have New International
right.
Version, we have all different interpretations of the original Bible with some potential hypothetical books left out of the Bible, but the Quran is
right.
the original Muslim
right.
book. And that's it, it's period, that's what it is.
And so what you have is a document of how they are to live and how they're to interact with each other and with infidels, but it's written in the 7th century, and they're still living in the 7th century in terms of the laws that they have.
So let me.
And as
I hate to interrupt you, why do you honestly, in your cold heart, why do you believe that there are so many radical Islamist Muslims, whatever you want to call them? Why do you feel that they just want to hate the Western nation? Why? What is their anger towards us, and why do they want to hurt us when the Muslim religion, allegedly, is supposed to be the most kindest, nicest religion there is?
Peaceful religion.
Right. So why all of a sudden do we have ISIS? Why do we have Islam? Why do we have ISIS? You know, whatever you want to call it. Why?
Well, let me give you an example. Under the Quran, homosexuality is forbidden. And if you watch any press, you know that people who are gays are thrown off of buildings, they're beheaded, they're burned, they're drowned.
Yeah, we talked about we talked about a couple of days ago how Hillary Clinton's foundation is taking so much money from Saudi Arabia, who's LGBT, blah, 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 blah. But go ahead. I'll let you finish that statement.
Okay. So the point is that they detest and believe it is their responsibility under the Quran and Sharia law to kill gays. Mm. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, we have in the United States, we decided, I shouldn't, that's probably the wrong way to say it. Let me say it a different way. Five people decided out of their own institutional arrogance that they had the ability and the right to change the definition of marriage, which had been around since the beginning of man. When they allowed gay men to marry men and women to marry women and other various combinations, we enraged the Muslims.
Okay.
Because we attacked their religion when we said that we're going to redefine marriage, and the world watched as we decided that marriage could be between a man and a man and a woman and a woman and a man and a woman. That was abhorrent to them because it was counter to their beliefs, their religious beliefs, sure, for 1,400 years. So can't you imagine that if somebody attacked your religion and your religious beliefs,
now you're
you fell as...
Now,
you're not going to be thrilled with that.
No,
you're not
going to
be happy with that.
No, you're right. And that makes perfect examples. That makes sense to does not make sense to me, but I understand where you're coming from with the knowledge you have.
Okay, so if you understand that the things that we do in our country have implications beyond just the United States, then you'll understand why, with the expansion of the LGBT community in the United States, everything we do to promote homosexuality and try and make it equal enrages them.
So you had some comments. You had some comments about the whole Orlando attacks too. I'd like for you to get in that. We got about 5 minutes left, but I'd love for you to engage a little bit.
Time went really by quickly.
I know, right? I mean, we can have you back on next week. I tell you, it's already been an hour. But, you know, I love having this conversation with you because
again, couple things. Let's deal with Orlando real quick. Let's deal with Orlando from the standpoint of how that event was manipulated and everything was not told to the American people. First of all, understand that under Sharia law and the Quran, if you are a homosexual, there is redemption. You can get to heaven. But the way you get to heaven is that you must kill Muslims.
Wow.
And or you must kill homosexuals.
That's Sharia law. That is the Sharia law?
Right, right. You got to kill homosexuals, but then you have to martyr yourself.
Oh, God. That's so.
So in Orlando, we were told after the shootings that this gentleman who was an American, and that's important to say that for just a moment, was rejected as a gay partner, and so that his murder of 49 people and injuring the other ones was a function of being rejected.
So no, Dan, I have to interrupt you. We never get callers. Honest to God, all we do is commentate here. But we got a caller I've never seen on the line before, so I don't know what he wants to talk about. But I want to bring him in. He may want to talk about something awful. He may want to talk to you or me. I'm not for sure. Would you mind if I brought him in real quick?
Sure, go right ahead.
All right, Simon, welcome to the show. Golden NVR, live at 5 with Dan Perkins. How are you?
NVR, how is it going?
I'm adequate. How are you?
Not bad. Hey, I have one question for Dan, is it?
Dan Perkins,
yes.
That's accurate.
Okay, so he said that five people have the arrogance to make a decision about marriage. Does that mean that we should allow Muslim beliefs to dictate the way that we live our lives in the United States? I have nothing against Muslims. I'm just saying that when in the United States have we allowed, one small portion of society to dictate how we live, or one small religion, maybe not small, but one religion to dictate how we live? I thought it was supposed to be like freedom of religion, where you all practice your own religion, and, that should not dictate the laws in our society. Like, just because they're going to suicide bomb somebody, does that mean that we should not allow a certain group of people to have their civil rights as well?
I got some comments on that one, too. But I'll let you go, Dan. Simon, okay. Thanks for calling, brother. We'll talk to you soon. Dan, you go first, and I'll go second.
All right. Thank you.
I said earlier in the question that decisions sometimes are made, and they have consequences. Some are good. Some are bad. Some are current. Some are longer term. My point is, why was it that the five judges of the Supreme Court decided what people don't understand, again, that ignorance, the court does not have to accept every case that's brought to it. It can say we're not going to rule because it is inappropriate or there is no need. There was no need for the Supreme Court because marriage and the definition of marriage and the structure of marriage and how marriage was to be conducted was a state business. When you get married, you get a state license. You don't get a federal license. And so what happened is that the court decided to take the responsibility away from the states to determine what was an appropriate marriage.
Well, you know what? I'm going to interrupt you. I have to, just because Dan, because I'm that type of guy. So what is an appropriate marriage? Is it Adam and Eve or Adam and Steve? Where is it? What is an appropriate marriage? We can go back to the book of Genesis and the King James Version. What is an appropriate marriage, in your opinion?
We are a country that was founded on Judeo-Christian principles.
I understand.
Under Judeo-Christian principles, marriage is between a man and a woman.
I agree with that, but my cough button obviously doesn't work here. I agree with that, but I also have, as technology, as everything else, like, progresses in society, does sexuality progress in society?
No, not necessarily. The courts could have easily said.
I'm not talking about the courts. I'm not talking about courts. I'm talking about generalities.
But let me just. The court shouldn't dictate morality either. What I'm saying is that the court, prior to the court's decision, many states had created what are called civil unions.
Right.
They just chose not to call them marriages. See, the operative word here, Mark, is marriages.
Right.
The court defined what marriage was. And the states had taken their responsibility and decided not to call unions between two of the same sex a marriage. They called it a civil union. But the court, the five leaders of the court, decided that they needed to define marriage. They didn't need to define marriage.
Dan,
they did it because...
Dan?
Yes?
I love you, buddy. I tell you, when I heard you on the radio, I uniquely enough, I had to listen to you, listen and listen. And I cannot believe this hour is already over. And unfortunately, I have to give up this opportunity to give on to the next show, which is so much better than this show we just talked about. But I want everybody to know, how can they find you? Give me your reset.
Okay, so the books are available from Amazon.com, and they're called The Brotherhood of the Red Nile. Just do a search for Dan Perkins, and that'll take you directly there. They're available in paperback, hard copy, ebook, and audiobooks, and the audiobooks are spectacular. My website is danperkins.guru, G-U-R-U, and the foundation is Songs and Stories for Soldiers.us. And one thing we didn't say, for $10 contribution, which you can do with PayPal on the website, we can deliver an MP3 system loaded with content.
I got more time, Dan. I got more time. I want to talk more about Fourth of July week one. I want to talk about Songs for Soldiers. Tell me more about that real quick.
Songs and Stories for Soldiers is a 501c3. It's a recognized nonprofit. We are rated a bronze by GuideStar, which rates nonprofits. And we're in the Amazon Smile program. We're basically 100 cents of every dollar that we get goes to the program. There are three trustees. We take no salary, no benefits. We pay our own travel expenses. So all the money, every $10 you send to us, goes to the purchase and delivery of an MP3 system to the soldier. He gets an MP3 player, 8 gigabytes of storage, USB cable, earbuds, flash memory stick, and a charger. We can deliver it with content already preloaded, so the moment they get it, they can entertain themselves, and they also have an 8-hour sleep audio on the program.
$10. I appreciate you. I had a great time for the last hour talking about you. And you know what? I don't want you to be a stranger. I love talking to you because I'm on your page, man. I'm on your page. And I think that, you know, together, whether my 17 people who listen to my audience can make a difference, or the thousands of people that you have that you can reach out to every day, we'll make a difference between what we can do here. And let's celebrate 4th of July together. And I wish you the best of the weekend.
Same to you, sir. Thank you for having me on.
You got it, buddy. We'll take care.